Blog Talk Radio.
Someday I'll have me a chauffeur and a block-long limousine, EO11, EO11. Someday I'll have me a penthouse, stacks and stacks of Bowling Green, EO11, EO11. It's all a state of mind, whether or not you find that place down there or heaven. In the meantime, EO, EO11, EO11, EO11. Show me a man without a dream, and I'll show you a man that's dead, real dead. Once I had me a dream, but that dream got kicked in the head. Dream dead. I nearly had me that chauffeur and that block-long limousine, EO11, EO11. I nearly had me that penthouse, all them stacks of Bowling Green, E11, 11. Some judge is gonna say I'm putting you away for 84 years and 7. In the meantime, EO11, 11,
11.
Ooh, do it, do the till you do the ski, do the squee, do dow.
Absolutely. Feedback City, baby. Oh, okay. Anyway, good to be here with you, James Mostick, a conservative's perspective on Patriot Nation Radio. It's Tuesday. It's got to be Patriot Nation Radio here at blogtalkradio.com. We do it live twice a week, Tuesdays, Thursdays, ordinarily, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. 2 hours on Tuesday. We have an hour. 7 to 8 is what we do on Thursdays, and then we're followed up by the handsome one himself, El Guapo, Mark Hoffman, with Patriot Nation Radio Live. Well, here's what we're going to talk about, y'all. Last week, it was my privilege. Not last weekend, weekend before. To be down once again at Rock the Red. This is a political rally that goes on in Greenville, conservative political rally. It goes on in Greenville, South Carolina. Started going 3 years ago. Yeah, this is my third turn there. And it was a multifaceted event for a number of reasons. And one of them was it was going to give me an opportunity to meet in person some really important people to me, and that is Don Newen and his lovely wife, Donna Fiducia. I know some of you guys probably remember Donna Fiducia as one of the prototype info babes there in the early days of Fox News, the cable channel. She was the first female air traffic reporter, WABC, New York, and then she moved over to Fox, and she had a terrific run there. And then now she is the host of Cowboy Logic Radio with her husband, the always irrepressible Don Newen. And it gave me a chance also to meet face-to-face our next guest. He is an outstanding radio host. He is a terrific guy. He is my friend, and I am really proud to say that. Gary Benford is with us, host of United Patriots Uprising, and it was there. It was there 3 years ago that I got the opportunity, the privilege, the pleasure, as I said, to meet Don, Donna, and Gary, all three together there, face to face. And we brought him up now. Gary, welcome to a conservative
collective. Yeah, I'm here.
Can you
hear
me, back.
How are
yes,
you?
Yes, I can.
Am I there? Yeah, you know, Sammy Davis Jr. He's cool. He's all right. But I was kind of expecting, you know, and I was coming on, like, oh, my man, James Brown, or were you afraid I'd get too much on the good foot?
You know what? That never really occurred to me. I was thinking about – no, seriously, I was thinking about EO 11 was kind of like – that was kind of like a joint theme for both of
it
us
was.
There
it
in
was.
The early days.
It was.
And since you were coming back, I wanted to make you feel
hey,
good.
That's fine. Yeah, plus, I may have gotten too riled up and started trying to do splits here and stuff, and I'm too old for that stuff.
We'll play Living in America. Next time I have you as a guest, we'll open
hey,
Living
you know
in
what?
America.
You know what? It's a very interesting that you said that, James, because, you know, it's funny and it's sad. You have so many of these liberal loons that don't want to live in America anymore, and you have all these people from around the world, including my current podcast guest right now, Eric Corcoran, whose family immigrated from Ireland legally, as Donald Trump would say, who will risk their lives to get here. So because it's still the greatest country in the world and the only free country, really, that we know that you can have what we have, but we're losing it. And that's why we go down to Rock the Red, because we get great guests to bring on our shows. But also, wouldn't you say it's so encouraging to hear and meet like-minded people to know we still exist?
Yeah, I think it is, you're absolutely right. It's really not self-affirming, but it does give you that affirmation because you're in New York, I'm in West Virginia, Don and Donna are in Georgia, Ron Phillips is in Texas. You know, I mean, everybody's all over the place, and yeah,
uh-huh.
We can get together anytime we want. I can pick up a phone, you and I can FaceTime, we can do other things, but there's something about that physical congregation, being together. And, yeah, it does. It is very encouraging. And like I said, you know, you walk away, or at least I have just every single time, coming back and feeling a little more buoyed up, a little more optimistic. And I think that's really important right now to keep focus on that light that's not really that far away. It seems like it at times. But we just stay focused on that light and keep moving towards it.
You're right, James, and I have to say selfishly, and I'll use the word selfishly. Selfishly, it helps us, but it doesn't help our friends, at least not my friends, and I'll tell you why. Every year we go down, and we learn so much. I remember the first year learning from John Delemmy, from Claire Lopez, from Trevor Loudon, from Juan Dolo, from Elena George about even before the virus hit, what was going on. And then last year from General Flynn and Tom Holman and all kind of people. And this time just listening to Mike Lindell talking about all the election fraud stuff and Lara Trump about what it took and all the problems that her father-in-law had in the White House and even Roger Stone talking about everything that had happened to him. And you learn so much, and then you come back just like you said and tell your friends the encouraging word that there's a groundswell movement from the grassroots on up, and all it does, at least to my friends, it depresses them even more, because the more we come back and say there was more election fraud than we knew, there's more problems that this and the judges, we tell them everything, and they go, but nothing's changing, nothing's happening. And I don't know about you, but when I tell quite a few people, they're like, it doesn't help them because they can't see that light at the tunnel that we tell them is there because we've been telling them for 3 years. And it's gotten worse instead of better. But it's there. That light's there. going to happen.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you. You're right. It definitely has gotten considerably worse, and we're not through that. I was listening to him today, and it was probably on Breitbart, because that's who I usually listen to in the morning. But we have opened the door, and we have stepped into this dark, unfamiliar room. We don't know anything about what's going on in there. We don't know who's in there. We don't know what's happening. We don't know what's going to happen. But in order for us to get to the light, for us to get back in the light, we have to go through this room. And it's going to be tough. People are going to look at that room. They're going to come up to it, and they're going to look at that choice. And some of them are going to say, anything has got to be better than what we're doing now. Nothing can be worse than where we're at now. Let's go through the dark room. On the plus side, we'll never see all the monsters that are really there, if they are. And other people aren't. Other people are going to lose heart. Other people are going to be like you say. They're going to say, what's the point? Why go through the dark when I can just stay right here, happy with the misery that I know? And we don't want you to stay here with the misery that you know. We want you to shake that off. We want you to steel yourself to the task of walking through that dark room to the other side. And I tell you what, if you go with us, you will help steel our resolve as well, because there's strength in numbers. And we get, it is discouraging for a lot of people. And you're right, thanks to events like Rock the Red and others like them all over the country, guys, we speak about Rock the Red because that's just one that we have become affiliated with and that we have this kinship with the folks who attend on a regular basis, the speakers who are there on a regular basis. But there are events like this going on all over the country.
Over the country, right.
Everywhere. But back to what we were talking about, yeah, it does. It really makes me feel heartened. But at the same time, you're right. When we come back, it seems as though it kind of highlights that discouragement that's out there. And we just got to push through. We just got to push
through.
Right.
Well, I think there's a reason for that, James. And I think it's a sociological reason. It's an economical reason. And it all ties in to the difference between the two political parties. The Republicans and conservatives and Christians in general are people who are responsible. They love America. They love the country. They believe in God,
yes,
family, country, constitution. They work. They raise their kids, and they try and do the right thing. And they count on the leadership that they put in public office and in the courts and in the police departments and in all civic operations to do their job. They're citizens, and they want to stay citizens. The Democrats, by nature, are activists because they more so believe in a bottom-up because they don't have truth on their side. So that's why Saul Alinsky was able, and Barack Obama, as community organizers, were able to be so successful because people on the left will roll their sleeves up, and everybody wants to be a Che Guevara wannabe, and they will get out there, and they don't care about their jobs. They don't care about money. They'll just care about a cause. Whether it's a homosexual or lesbian cause, whether it's an abortion cause, whether it's a bring down the church cause, whether it's a get rid of free speech, get rid of guns, they will go door to door and hammer people, and they will work from the bottom up. We were looking for top down that will put you in leadership positions and then you take care of it. The problem is, as you know, and as we found out, I had no clue till I got to Rock the Red 3 years ago, and the first person that really opened my eyes was John Guandola, who was talking about the problems within the FBI and the Muslim Brotherhood and everything that was going on with the government. What we found out was the system is corrupt. The head of the fish stinks from the head down. So what ended up happening, we get a great president, And people are saying, okay, now he'll take care of it. Well, no, they ran him out of town, right? You know, and then they got, you're looking at the House and the Senate and the so-called Republicans, and when it got tough, where did they go? And then you look at the Supreme Court, what did they do? And then you keep going down, 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 and you see our side failed on every level, okay, because a lot of them weren't real. But the point is, this is where we are now. We are where the Democrats have been for 50 years. It's grassroots, and now we're going to have to do it, because if we don't do it, it's not going to get done. That's why you're seeing all kind of rock the reds and all kind of movements, and all over the United States. And it's being effective. It's being effective the same way the Democrats were, getting 100 people, 150 people in a room, and then they go tell other people, and then they go tell other people. And you've got a billion, zillion podcasts out there now, and now the word is starting to get out that we've got to do it. And here's where the depressing part is. It's just like dieting. You don't gain 50 pounds in 2 weeks. You can't lose it. You know, you gain 50 pounds over 10 years, then you want to lose it in 10 weeks. It doesn't work that way. We're going to have to take this thing back day by day, because we lost and gave up a lot of the store over a period of time. It's going to take time to get it done, but you've got to start. I think we've started, and you're starting to see this groundswell, just like the MAGA movement, of patriotic people who have said enough, and they realize they backed us up against the cliff. Either we go over or we fight, and I see we're fighting.
I'm inclined to agree with you on that. And one of the places that I think we have seen it, and they mentioned it a couple of times down in Greenville, is in the education system. I think that's one of the places. And being, and for the interests of disclosure, I'm in the school business. My daytime gig is that I work in the high school that I graduated from. So I have that whole welcome back Cotter thing going for me. And I love it. I mean, and I love what I do. I love the children I work with. And having been said, you know, there are, and I work in a school system that is fundamentally normal. What I mean by that is there are board members who see what's going on, I think, in these other school boards where they're having issues with CRT, where they're having issues with grooming and gender orientation and all this insanity that should be left to parents, and they look askance at it. And I've got to say, to my everlasting relief, we've got some good people on the county school board where I'm at. But there are a lot of places throughout the country, and we've seen it in Virginia. We saw it in Loudoun County, Virginia, all last autumn, what's going on. And it is an awakening, and the parents are prevailing. And in a roundabout way, we can thank the pandemic,
yep,
in a certain, you know, in to a certain measure, for this to happen, because now parents are walking past Zoom meetings, they're walking past Ring Central meetings, and they're hearing this claptrap that these education majors are spewing to these people, and they're going, wait, what the what?
Yep. You got it.
And it shatters, it's beginning to shatter the casual arrogance that the educational elites in this country have operated under for so many years. And I find it to be, personally, like I said, I find it to be heartening. And that's going to be one of the places it's a linchpin in terms of how critical it is, because it is through the educational process that we've wound up in the situation where we are. Because these Marxists, these cultural Marxists, these leftists have permeated the education system, from the public education system into our college and university system, to the point that, you know, it's metastasized into some kind of terminal ideological cancer, and we've got to excise it.
You got that right. And please do not sleep on the shortage of baby formula, because that's going to hit women, whether they're conservative, liberal communists, that's going to hit them hard, because now you're messing with their children and their little babies, and you're not going to do anything about
children
it.
Children of illegal aliens over
there. Mm-hmm. There you go. They're going too far, James. Remember I told you this a year ago. They're going to go too far, and they're going to go too far and won't be able to walk it back.
Well,
going to find themselves in the middle of the Red Sea and no way out.
Exactly. And what have we – and you know what? And you and I have talked about this before as well. It is that overreach, and they always do. They always have. They look at their environment and the situation that they're at, and they believe that they have a greater extension than what they really do. And that has been, in large measure, the country's saving grace. Because every time they do overreach, they stumble. And when they stumble, that gives us a chance to stem the flow of this insanity and try and, once again, like we did in 2016, make a course correction for this country that's going to set things back to rights, pardon the pun.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. You know, this is – you there?
Yeah, I'm right here. I'm right here.
Yeah, this is – okay. This is where it's at. And everybody, I think people are starting to wake up. But I said this last year, but it's like that game Donkey Kong, how low can you go? Unfortunately, it's almost like God is saying, how much are you going to put up with this before you just say enough? Because I thought last year was we had reached rock bottom, but obviously not. And I don't know about what was the most devastating thing that you heard, but the most devastating thing to me, and I know you weren't there Friday, for the Friday session, was about the people who are in still being held. And they're not even prisoners. They're like political prisoners. So they don't even have the rights of people in jail that are still incarcerated for what happened on January 6th. And they have no trial, no date, no nothing. Nothing is happening. They're just being held there. And the reasons why, it was just completely just I didn't expect that. I didn't expect. And they're still looking for other people that they can find on video and get face recognition to try and arrest them and throw them in jail. Whether you were a part of anything or not, it's not about what you did, it's about what you saw. You know, and it's incredible, right? This is incredible that this is going on in the United States of America, but it is. It's scary.
And incidentally, folks, Gary brings that up, and I'm really glad you did. Coming up in the 8 o'clock hour, journalist Sean Witzman from StopHate.com is going to be with us. Sean was there at Ground Zero. He has gone through some stuff, and we're going to be talking about that later. I tell you, the two telling things, and you're absolutely right in what you say, but I would submit this. America is a big country, and in many respects, like China at the beginning of the Second World War, you know, when the Japanese went in and they took Nanking and they expanded throughout the Chinese mainland, they were said to have awoken a sleeping giant. And that's what they did. And that's where we're at right now. No, we're not quite rock bottom yet. I hope we're close. I hope we're close.
I don't want to see rock. If this isn't rock bottom, I don't want to see what it is.
Exactly. But I think, but you're right. And I think what it is where we've gone to these events and we're embedded with this mindset of optimism and encouragement. Because we are informed, the things that they're telling us at these events, it's not all good, but it is encouraging because there is an awareness growing, and that's what's happening. And we are a big country, and I think that awakening is starting to gain momentum. I think that more and more people, as we have hit the economic times that we're in. And the two points that I would make that I think stand in stark contrast to last year at Rock the Red, and we're really not talking about last year, we're talking about last June. So within the last, well, almost a year, yeah. There were only about half as many people there this year. And that's revealing for a number of reasons, because you have this stereotypified image, this perception of conservatives as these elitist, blue blood, white collar, country club types that are all independently wealthy and don't care about anything. But that's not the case, Gary, and you know that as well as I do. What we see at Rock the Red is probably one of the greatest cross-sections of what is great about this country that there is. There are white people, there are black people, there are Korean guys, a fellow from Cuba. I mean, they're from all over the map, and they're from all walks of life. They're
I don't see an elitist attitude amongst anybody. I mean, they're just patriots, Christians, and those that aren't Christians are patriots. They're just people that love this country and want to soak up as much information as they can to take back to their circles of influence and spread the word.
That's it. And another case in point, which I think is a sad commentary on Joey the Biden's economy, our pal Jeff Preston. Now, you know, last year at the dinner there before General Flynn spoke, they did an auction of one of those cliches that he did.
Uh-huh.
The first thing I remember, and he had a terrific night. He had a terrific night. I think he cashed out at $15,000 for that print, and there were 45 of these prints. Get it?
Mm-hmm.
And you could have that one numbered, number one or number 45, and it went for $15,000. Now his new piece, I have returned, and I know you've seen it, folks. If you're not familiar with the fellow that we're talking about, JeffPreston.org. He is a patriot. He is an illustrator and artist of no small talent at all.
Breathtaking work.
And he's a very Rockwellian. Norman Rockwell is what it reminds me of. He's an outstanding artist, and he did a follow-up piece to what he did last year. And I think it went for $1,500. $3,000.
Yeah, and a young kid bought it. I started to lean over and ask Claire Lopez if I could borrow a couple dollars, but I said, nah.
She probably had that in her left pocket. Yeah, she could have bought that.
But that piece of work. In fact, I put that on Facebook with a picture of the Trump coming in off the shore with soldiers. And with Jeff holding the picture, and it got 300 likes within 10 hours. Striking piece of work. He's very talented.
Absolutely. But now at the same time, you know, even though the numbers were down at this event, and I would say probably maybe a third, if not half, at least down by a third. And but you know what? That same vibe was still there, that same ambiance, that same sense of fellowship and optimism was still there. And I think by and large, that too needs to be pointed out as a tribute to Presley Stutz and Joe Dugan both. Those are these two fellows that we're talking about are the people who originated and then continued this event. It was an offshoot of the South Carolina Tea Party, and I'm not going to get too far into the weeds on this stuff, but this event as a political event evolved into what it is today through the efforts of those two fellows, Joe Dugan and Presley Stutz. Sadly, they've both gone on to their reward, and that's a tragic thing in and of itself. But what they left behind in their legacy with what's going on with the people who go here. And, folks, I'm talking top-flight political thinkers. I'm talking people who influence political thought, authors, artists, and everybody's there for one thing only. They love this country. They love this country, and they want, and they understand clearly we're not at the preeminent position that our manifest destiny calls for us to be. And we're looking at the reasons why, and we're looking at the answers to the problems that are bedeviling us and keeping us from reaching, but you know, from getting back to our established position in the world.
Yeah, and I can tell
it
you
wasn't
because
that long ago.
Yeah, I can tell you because you were there. I was actually in a stunned amazement. Like I had the pleasure of having Mike Lindell on my podcast. In fact, it was the highest rated podcast I've ever had because the lineup. It was a long podcast, but we had General Flynn, Mike Lindell, Lucretia Hughes, John DeLemme, and Sean Farish, who is the greatest imitate Trump
right.
imitator that I know of. But his movement, Long Island Loud Majority, is a legitimate movement, and Sean shows people how to mobilize. That Mike did 50 minutes from an airport. So, you know, he's in an airport, and he did 50 minutes for the podcast. So we're sitting there listening to him Saturday night, and James, I was absolutely amazed because he's only supposed to do 45 minutes. He probably did 90 minutes, but what
at least,
amazed
yeah.
me, he was as funny as any stand-up comic I ever heard while being serious as a heart attack at the same time about what was going on in the country and about election integrity and election fraud. And it was amazing how he could make you laugh and be dead serious at the same time. I just sat there in amazement. What about you?
He is as charismatic and gregarious a speaker as I've seen in a long time. He was dynamic, and I'm exactly like you. It didn't seem like 90 minutes. I mean, it went
quick. By the way, and if you came. If you came when you went to get your badge and your pass, you got Mike Lindell's book for free.
Yes.
He gave away he gave away a copy of his book for free to everybody that came to the convention. Even Friday you got the book, even though he was speaking Saturday.
Let's just take away and let's just toss out everything that's happened from 2020 on, his involvement in uncovering all the election fraud. Let's just forget about all that. His story from there up to that point is so inspirational. I mean, he was hopelessly addicted.
Right.
He was a substance abuser. He was addicted to crack. And I mean, you want to talk about the rock bottom of rock bottoms? There you are. And then what happens? You know, from the ashes.
He found Jesus Christ, and Jesus raised him up. But one of the things that I think was very important that you saw from almost everybody, at least the keynote speakers, you know, Lara Trump talked about her father-in-law, Donald, and, of course, Roger Stone had his own testimony, and so did Mike Lindell. But the one thing that permeated with me from all three of the keynote speakers, if you want to stand up for God, family, country, constitution, liberty, and freedom in this climate in America, you can do it, and you can be successful, but it's going to cost you something. Because the ordeal that Roger Stone went through, exactly what Mike Lindell is still going through, having to leave Minnesota, everything that Donald Trump went through, I didn't know about all the assassination attempts and all the things that she talked about behind the scenes, that nobody in the family was prepared for what they got. And the biggest thing that came out, that if you're an ideologue, you knew this was going to happen, that Donald Trump was completely blindsided by, and that entire Trump family, he actually thought it would be like the Republican, primary. You're 17 people, bing, 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 I knock you out, and bang, bang, bang. You know, and then, okay, then I'm the nominee. Now we all work together for the good of the country. She said he actually thought that once the election was over, the Democrats would come and work with him for the good of America. Wrong. He got totally blindsided by what we know. They're ideologues. We know, we understand who they are, what they're about. They're trying to overthrow the government. And that was a major shock to him when he thought Pelosi and everybody else and they were going to work with him, and not only did they not work with him, but the rhinos and the Republican establishment just tried to cut his knees off. So there's a price to pay if you want to stand up for liberty and freedom in this country in this day and age. And the great news is there are people willing to forge ahead, no matter the cost, to get the job done.
The price of peace, Barry Goldwater said, was constant vigilance. And you know what? That is so encompassing, because peace is not simply the absence of war. Peace is prosperity. It's security. It's the ordered liberties, enjoying the ordered liberties that God bequeathed us through the founders.
Yeah. And can I say one thing, James?
Absolutely.
Since you didn't hear Roger Stone Friday night, I just want to say one thing to make this very clear about what Roger Stone said. Now think about this. When you're thinking about your government and law enforcement and the top levels of security in the United States, everything that Roger Stone, according to Roger Stone, and I believe him, everything they tried to pin on him and why they tried to put him in jail for the rest of his life would have gone away with a snap of the finger if he had just given them what they wanted, and that was to lie and say the phone calls between him and Trump were about Russian espionage. In other words, that Trump was working with Russia. They actually just wanted Roger to lie. Just tell them what we want you to tell them about Trump, and all this goes away. Can you believe that from our government? This is where we're at, people. This is why you look around and what you see is what you see. Right.
And Michael Flynn was homeless.
Right. Same thing. And it would have gone away overnight.
Yeah. Hell, they would have given him a bigger house.
Yeah. There's some people that have a bigger house. Yeah, and they lied. Okay, yeah.
Well, listen, Gary, tell us about the program. Tell us where you're at, when they can hear you, because you are like the superstar now. And
why do you say that? People are going to think they're going to hear something, and I'm no different than you. I'm just another guy trying to make it on internet radio.
Yeah, well, and that's the point you have, and I am inordinately proud of your success for what you do. And Gary and I have been friends for a long, long time, and I love him very, very much. And when we first met, the very first Rock the Red that we went, and I got to meet Gary for the first time, and I got to meet my friends, Newman and Fiducia. The guest speaker that night, the keynote speaker, was Doug Collins. We had a great dinner there, and we were sitting at a table, Gary and myself, with Trevor Loudon and his family. I'm trying to think who else was there. But Gary had a guest spot on my program, and he had also had a segment on another program called Rocky and the Gons with some friends of his in New York.
And Rocky and the Wolfman. The Wolfman was in Afghanistan, so it was Rocky and the Wolfman. Right.
Rocky,
I don't want him coming
after
you. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry about that. And you guys have listened to him, and I know if you've tuned in any of the times that he's been a guest, you know why I said to him when I looked at him that evening, and I said, Gary, you need your own program. And the reason I said that is because you did. You laughed. You and I got the laugh.
Sure, well, James, I got it. You know, I've never told you this. The reason I laughed wasn't that I didn't think I could do my own thing. The reason I laughed is I didn't want to do my own thing because of the work that it would take, because I just had a 15-minute, half-hour spot on somebody else's show. They have to deal with the radio network. They have to deal with the advertising. They have to deal with the promotion and the public. They have to deal with everything and getting the guests and making sure they can fill 2 hours every Friday night. And all I got to do is just come on, rant for 15 minutes, say thank you and good night. You know, but you saw something in me that I didn't know I had, not because I didn't know I had didn't have it. I wasn't looking for it. In other words, that wasn't on my radar. Radio was never on my radar. I was just trying to do a little thing on Facebook with a Nation Savers at the time. It was 2016. Now it's up to 2021. Probably change the date to 2022 soon. And the late Tara Dawn, God bless her soul, she died last year. She called me and put me, you want me on your show? Why? Then she brought me on 17 times over a year period for 3 hours a pop on a Friday night. And then it was others and people started asking. But you saw it. And people, I must say, the reason if I have a show and learn the business is because of the man that has this show, because he produced my show when it was live. And the good thing about doing it live, you know, things never go right. And you know, I realized I could do this. And then I was blessed to, you know, get with an organization, radioinfluence.com, that puts me out. Tracy Beans is there, and she, you know, we're the two conservative voices on there. It's really just a platform, a radio network platform. They don't really have a lot of political shows on there. They have a lot of shows. They have wrestling shows and, you know, and comedy shows. They have everything. But it's been a blessing. I've done Eric Corcoran today was the 21st show because I only do it as a hobby that God allows me to do. I do it twice a month, every other Tuesday. But now I'm probably through the election cycle going to go every week. And you can find it. It's called United Patriots Uprising with Gary Benford. You can go to radioinfluence.com to see the show. Find it and see the archives, or you can find it on any of your favorite podcast platforms. It's on everything, Apple, Stitcher, Google, iHeartRadio. It's there. And I try and bring on the best guests possible, as you know. So people, you know, regardless of what you think I may or may not know, you'd rather hear it from people like Lieutenant General Flynn and Mike Lindell and Dr. Carol Swain and, you know, Trevor Loudon, Claire Lopez, John Guandolo, David Horowitz has been on recently, Jamie Glazov, Rebecca Friedrichs. They cover all, you know, so, and Eric Corcoran, who is a Businesses for Liberty, he's the current guest. Then, James, the upcoming, just so you know, we're going to have a roundtable with Claire Lopez and Donna Fiducia, because that's who I spend most of my time with down at Rock the Red. And we sit around just talking, and I just thought it would be great to talk about, you know, to just do what we do down there. Then some of the other speakers, Dan Wass, the Second Amendment guy, Christy Hutcherson, who is great on the border, Jovan Pulitzer, who is going to talk about election fraud and integrity, Pastor Greg Locke, about doing what you're supposed to do, to, you know, for God, family, country, constitution. Lee Valentine, who has anti-aging cream. You know, I need that anti-aging cream from her. But she was at 72 Trump rallies and is a great patriot herself. And Dr. Carol Swain will be coming back. So, you know, and I'm still trying to fit a few people in there here and there, reaching out to you know who, trying to get somebody that was at Rock the Red that I haven't heard back from yet, but we'll see. But, you know, it's been a blessing. And I thank you because you were the one that believed in me. So I thank you very much.
Well, Gary, I appreciate you saying that. But, yeah, it was obvious to me, not only from the time, of course, that, you know, you spent on the radio there with me, but just simply from the time that you and I spent on the phone talking. And you have the chops, you have the experience as a journalist, as a sports writer, working with musical talent in show business, and you were tempered, you were seasoned, and all those things in your past experience told me that this guy's going to be a natural, and as soon as he gets up to the microphone, he's going to be knocking it out of the park in no time at all. And I was right. And what you're doing now is absolutely terrific. United Patriots Uprising. He's out there. You got to look for him. Gary, I really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah.
I didn't keep
thanks
you
for
this
having
one.
Me. Can I say one more thing?
Because absolutely.
For people to understand, when you're not doing anything, and I told James, the big thing, I said, James, you know, the only way I can do this is if I can get nationally known names, because there everybody has a podcast. And, you know, I just didn't want to take all the time and effort that it would take me to do this. And you've been very helpful, and I'll never forget how that first show came together, because I called somebody out in Hollywood, Beverly Zaslow. She knows a lot of people. And I asked her the same thing. Can I do this? Because she had heard me on Rocky and the Wolfman, and she thought, we talked for about an hour and a half. She said, oh, yeah, you could do this. And I said, you really think so? I said, I need some people. And she got me Morgan Brittany and Nick Searcy for my first show. I had Curtis Bowers and Burgess Owen, who I knew. And that first show went like that. Nick Searcy, Burgess Owen, Curtis Bower, and Morgan Brittany. And they all came on live, and away it went. And, you know, the only reason I'm bringing this up, you can't do it alone. You need help. You need people who believe in you. And it's been people all along the way, as you know. Like, you call me, you want somebody, if I can get them, or if I know how to reach them, I can. There's been people, you know, people help me. General Flynn just doesn't come on your show because you asked him. Somebody, you know, and now it's reached the point where these high-profile people that know each other, they can just shoot an email. I've got a resume. So it makes it a lot easier now. But, you know, you have to start somewhere, and you were very instrumental in helping me get started. So, I appreciate it.
It was my pleasure, Gary. And promise me you're going to be back here real soon.
Well, as you know, as I always say, as Michael Jackson said, whenever you want me, I'll be there.
All right. That's exactly what I wanted to hear. And likewise, anything you need from me, you have but to ask. Ladies and gentlemen, we've been talking with my very, very
well,
good
hold
friend.
On, hold on. Since you asked, and you said it on the air, there's something I need. I need that cannon you have, because I want to blow some people off the face of their mind. Only kidding. I don't want to get arrested. Okay. I'm sorry, James. But I was going to ask for the cannon, because these people are really starting to annoy me in New York.
Well, let's get a list together. Let's get a list together and see what we can come up with, and we can whittle it down. You know we can. We've been talking with my good friend, Mr. Gary Binford, radio host of United Patriots Uprising. Thanks so much, Gary. Like I said, I didn't mean to keep you this long, but I'm really glad that you stayed. I know you got a lot of things going on. I appreciate your generosity. And again, I'll be looking forward to having you back here real soon.
Hey, thanks, James, and keep on doing what you're doing. And because every voice counts, and I used to listen to you before I even got into this, so this is great. You were an inspiration. Because you sit there and talk. See, you do it. You sit there and talk for an hour or two. I just bring on guests and let them talk. I ask a question and just throw a little line in there now and then, you know. But you do it the hard way.
Well, I never had any juice to get any names until I started going to Rock the Red. I had no choice. If I was going to get out there and do it, I had to step into the arena by myself. And that's I have no regrets about doing that. I have no regrets about doing that because if I can be, you know, if God forbid somebody doesn't know me and they call upon me to speak, buckle up, Buttercup, because it's
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I learned the hard way, as you know, when a certain guest from that first Rock the Red, and you're producing the show, and the show was live, and he doesn't show and never shows, and I have a half-hour gap. And remember General Flynn, we couldn't find him, and Hoffman is hyperventilating, and we're like, and I had, that's when I learned that I had a little bit of something, because all of a sudden you have to talk for 20 minutes or a half hour, and I'm like, I listened to the playback because I had no clue what I said, and I said, hey, that didn't come out too half bad, so, okay.
No, it was smooth, and that's you know, that's the excitement about live radio, because I guarantee you something's going to go wrong somewhere at some point. It just does. And how you deal with it teaches you, you know, how to be that steely-eyed radio man that we all aspire to be. Thanks again, Gary.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me on. God bless you, the family, and God bless America.
We'll be talking to you soon.
You got it.
That is one terrific guy right there, Gary Benford. That's absolutely fantastic. Okay, United Patriots Uprising. Going to take a quick break. Like I said, coming back at the top of the hour, journalist Sean Witzman is going to be with us. He's from StopHate.com. He was there at Ground Zero on that day, January 6th, in Washington, D.C., and he's got a few things to tell us about it. In the meantime, we're going to take a brief musical interlude until we can link up with him. Back with more ACP right after this.
And just a gigolo, and everywhere I go, people know the part I'm playing. Paid for every dance, selling his romance. Oh, what they say. There will come a day, and youth will pass away. What will they say about me? When the end comes, I know they'll say just a gigolo. Life goes on without me. And just a gigolo, everywhere I go, people know the part I'm playing. Paid for every dance, selling each romance. Oh, what they say. And there will come a day, and youth will pass away. What will they say about me? When the end comes, I know there's just a gigolo. Life goes on without me, 'cause
I ain't got nobody.
Oh, and there's nobody good for me. There's nobody good for me.
I'm so sad.
Sad and lonely, sad and lonely. Won't some sweet mama come take a chance with me? 'Cause I ain't so bad then. Bobdy bozdy bat, blee bop.
I ain't got nobody.
Oh, and there's nobody to kiss for me. There's nobody to kiss for me. Nobody to kiss for me.
Baby, two people lined up with all kinds of vehicles, just to get a box of food, and they were drunk. How could we forget? People were hurting.
Oh my God.
What is the master I want to do? Forget it.
Get a load of this crazy ass.
God, this is the United States of America. The idea that people would have to wait in line an hour and a half to get a box of food and they're drunk. It's unbelievable.
Oh, Jesus. Joe Biden there apparently pissed off that his economy is not what he wanted to do. Look, okay, there you go. Okay, guys, the elephant, goddamn, the elephant is in the room. And it's time we said it. This dude is out to lunch. I've been saying it from the get-go. And to be quite honest with you, I cannot believe that he's still hanging around. But as long as he stays in this condition, he's the perfect tool for Obama 3.0. Welcome back. James Bond Security, Conservative's Perspective on the Patriot Nation Radio Network. Good to have you. Man, that was some good stuff with Ben Froh. I love that guy. He is great. And United Patriots Uprising, guys, he's on all the platforms. Go check it out and do yourself a favor. Listen to him. He has got top drawer guests all the time. And just, we both share that commitment. And I'm really tickled for him, honestly, that he's getting all these high-profile names because I'm going to ask him for them. I'm going to ask him. No, I am. I'm really tickled that he's a terrific dude, and I seriously could not be more proud of what he's doing for conservatives in the country in general, as well as for his own personal edification and notoriety. I'm happy. When we were talking about Rock the Red, our next guest lays in, and this just dovetails so nicely. Gary's commitment is the same as mine, and that being number one, when we have guests on, like Trevor Loudon, like Sebastian Gorka, like our friend Michael Cutler, like Gary, or Claire Lopez, or any of the folks that we have on here, my commitment is I am never, ever, ever going to bring on a guest that's going to waste your time. In other words, everybody that I'm bringing on here, they are worth listening to, and our next guest, no exception. Sean Witzeman was a gentleman I met. I'm going to go ahead and bring him up now. Sean, I'm going to go ahead and plug you in here, dude. Was a gentleman that I met in Greenville, South Carolina at Rock the Red the week before last. He's associated with a group called Stop the Hate, and he was there on that day, January 6th, in the Capitol. And there are things, like Gary mentioned earlier, there are people being held in the jails in the District of Columbia that have not been given due process. We're a year and a half into this. What's due process? They haven't been given the rights. They haven't been granted the right to a fair and speedy trial. They haven't been granted the right to representation. This is tough. And rather than me half-ass paraphrasing all the shocking things that I found about, we're going to let the man come on himself. Sean, welcome to A Conservative's Perspective. We're really happy to have you here. Thank you so much for coming in and talking with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, James. Great opportunity. I mean, I appreciate every chance I get to try to get the truth of that day and how dire the situation it is with these guys that are held in jail without due process and everything else nefarious that we've seen come to light about that day in the, you know, over a year and a half really now since the events occurred. It seems like it's been 12 years for those of us who've been investigating it.
So set the stage for us for that day in the days leading up to it. What were you doing? Was there any particular story that you were going to be following or that you thought might be worth looking into as it moved into January 6th and you went to Washington?
Yeah, there absolutely was. I mean, I had spent all summer really following different riots and covering, you know, different events of that nature throughout the country, obviously in Denver and Portland. Mainly,
right.
I had worked with a good kid from a completely different political leaning, but a good reporter nonetheless, Dylan Beresford. And he had worked Denver and Portland, and I worked closely with him on that. So I was well aware of, you know, the Antifa side of the coin, so to speak. As it moved into November, obviously we saw what happened with the election, and it was a very bizarre circumstance at that time.
Right.
And we saw that there was going to be, you know, really what I thought to be conservative protesting on a level that I don't think we've ever really seen before. And so I thought that that was interesting in and of itself. So I had gone to D.C. for the original Million MAGA March, and I was there for that entire affair. And just through a lot of circumstance, really, I wound up covering Proud Boys and other groups as they went to BLM Plaza on the evening of November 14th and cleared the place out, so to speak. So that was my first encounter at the time with Proud Boys, you know, beyond anything that you read in the mainstream reports, saying that they were white supremacists and everything else. And so I thought that that was kind of an interesting story to follow and kind of embed myself in as much as possible. So that's what I did. I went to Phoenix where Giuliani presented evidence to the Republican congressional members there, the state. And I was also in Atlanta following it as it went along. That path took me back to D.C. on December 12th, the weekend of December 12th, where there was a massive number of Proud Boys there. There was obviously a lot of violence in the streets, a lot of pepper getting sprayed. And I was right on the line for all of that between police, protesters, you had Antifa attacking people. So, I mean, something that I saw ahead of January 6th was there was increasing violence. There was increasing tension between police and right-wing groups or conservative groups. And a lot of that was based around the fact that Mayor Muriel Bowser in D.C. wasn't doing anything to stop Antifa from attacking people with the way she was ordering police. There was a lot of strange funneling of crowds that would lead to conflicts. And so it all seemed somewhat orchestrated from that end. And I think that was very apparent to a lot of the Proud Boys that were on the street as well, where they could see what was going on, that they were almost in some sort of a conflict with the state itself, with Mayor Bowser and with the way the police were being ordered to deal with things. It was very one-sided, lopsided. So I think there was a certain amount of frustration there. Now, as it moved into January 6th, I think there was a sense amongst almost everyone there that there was a certain last chance feel to everything. And I think we saw some of those emotions boil over. And I think there were people who were very aware of what the emotional state of everyone was. And I think that it's not unreasonable to say that there could have been some pretty major manipulation from a high level as far as the psychological warfare and what happened. But as far as any violence or anything else, I know that there had been some threats from Iran that day. And then obviously, I think it was around 12:30 was when they had discovered the pipe bombs that had been placed at the Cannon House building and at both the Republican and Democratic headquarters there. So, you know, there wasn't really, I didn't know what to expect. I mean, it was all coming at me very quickly. And I think that that was kind of the feel for the entire day as far as any sort of setup. I mean, Trump did his typical thing where he speaks late. I don't know. I'm sure there's people in the audience that have gone to Trump rallies, and I think he does always like to build some anticipation ahead of anything that he speaks at. And I didn't think it was anything different that day particularly. The crowd was obviously massive there. I mean, It's hard to say. The reports have been all over the place as far as how many people there were there, but it was a massive crowd. It was very hard to tell what was going on. Security was garbage. There was no very effective handling of the crowd. There was no restaurants open. Muriel Bowser had shut those down, which probably agitated the situation even further. Bathroom facilities were few and far between, and the ones that were available were absolutely overwhelmed by the amount of people, which led to some pretty disgusting things. So it was a disaster in the making in a lot of ways, just from a logistics standpoint, I think.
Now, this is where – I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, my question was, and I apologize, I didn't mean to interrupt. I thought you were finished. This is where I think things at the point where you're talking about now have a tendency, I think, to get very, very murky for a lot of people, again, based on everything that's been said and you know, the information, good and bad, mm-hmm. you know, that's accurate and is not accurate. And I guess what I'm wanting to get into is the subject of agents provocateur. And we know they were there. We know that there were instigators there. Were you exposed to any of that? And based on what you saw that day and based on your knowledge of the event, how prevalent were they?
Well, I think in retrospect, having analyzed a lot of video, it's easier to see things that are out of place. Obviously, when I was there that day, you know, I was right at the front lines, which is pretty typical with the way we cover events like that or conflicts between protesters and police. Is you pretty much put yourself right in harm's way because that's where the footage is. So a lot of what goes through my head when I'm doing that is trying not to get hit in the head with a tear gas canister or anything else.
Right.
And I was right over on the west side. So, you know, in the moment, I didn't particularly see anything that suggested to me that there were agent provocateurs in, you know, like you say, in the moment. A lot of what we've seen on that comes from reviewing a lot of open source video. And in fact, you know, StopHate.com, our founder, Dave Summerall, he just revealed, and we put an article out, that he's actually held a license through the DOJ and working with the McBride law firm, where he's been able to go back and review a lot, you know, as much of the 14,000 hours of sensitive footage as possible for one man. But I think, you know, I can't remember how the math works out. It's something like over 500 days if you were to just sit there and watch it 24 hours a day. But the advantage is that because we've put all this effort into looking at open source material, obviously listening to the people who've been accused of violence against the police, and so David's been able to go back and kind of piece that together because he knows where to look. And I think that that's the real fight when you're dealing with any sort of massive amount of evidence on that level, is you need to know where to look. And the only way to know where to look is to listen to the people who were there and not just dismiss their claims. And what David has said is he's gone through that. And obviously we've seen video footage of Officer Lila Morris, for example, repeatedly beating Roseanne Boylan with her baton, which they had initially reported as a methamphetamine overdose. So I think as time goes on and as more video becomes available, we're going to see, as David said, and these are his words, I've not seen a lot of the 14,000 hours of video, so I can't speak to it. But as David has said, it's probably one of the worst examples of police brutality in the history of the United States. And there were people, I mean, you know, that's what you say. You say, well, what would you do in that situation? What would you do if you were watching a police officer kill another human being for no good reason? I don't know. I don't know what I would do in that situation. And I think that's up to each person who finds themselves in that situation to decide whether or not they act in defense of another human being or not. So as far as agent provocateurs, I know that there was a journalist, Bobby Powell, and he can be found online, although I have to admit I have not been able to reach him for a few days now, which is somewhat concerning. So That's kind of how it goes, I guess, sometimes. But he had footage of what appears to be some very, very physically fit Trump supporters without Trump gear on, breaking windows on the east side of the Capitol and inviting people to go in. When he turns his camera to these guys, they didn't seem to like that very much. Now, Bobby Powell reported that he was actually threatened and bribed by GOP chair from Michigan, Rod Wisner, you know, the carrot being $200,000 if he would suppress his footage and shut up, and the stick being, well, you could get killed if you keep this up. A few weeks later, what? After that alleged meeting occurred, he was in Pinellas County, Florida. And he was at a rally to free Jeremy Brown, which, for those of you that don't know, he was the guy who was approached by the FBI prior to January 6th, and they asked him to become a federal informant. Well, he filmed that, and he has it on his security footage that they were there, that they visited him. So there is some corroboration there. He says that he refused them. Now, interestingly enough, he never went into the building. And he's been arrested and charged and indefinitely detained at this point. So, you know, going back, Bobby Powell was at this rally for him. And a gentleman showed up, Antifa associated, and Pinellas County Sheriff identified him as a potential threat. He ran from them. They chased him down. They made the arrest. They found what their bomb squad determined to be a pipe bomb in his backpack. And then a few weeks later, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives took over that case. They said that they determined that the pipe bomb was nothing more than a novelty device, and those charges were all dropped. So there's definitely some very bizarre circumstance, at the very least, going on in relation to that particular story. And, you know, from my own knowledge and sources that I have, and I had reported this, you know, perhaps 1 to 2 weeks after January 6th, was that there were multiple federal agencies with assets on the ground and embedded in the crowd that day. Now, what right. that means is kind of a little bit beyond my awareness or knowledge. And so it turns into a lot of conjecture at that point. But I think, and even speaking, I spoke with Joe Flynn over the weekend at the Reawaken America tour, and I'll have that video up at stop8.com here in the near future, hopefully in the next couple of days. But, you know, Joe Flynn had said that anybody who thinks that there wasn't knowledge beforehand and that there wasn't federal agents embedded, it's just naive, is how he put it. And I would absolutely agree based on what we've seen through video, what we know after the fact, and what my sources have told me.
Another thing that I've always thought unusual, and I know that it's been discussed, the lack of logistics, and by that what I mean is it's reasonable, I think, to assume that the powers that be had enough advanced knowledge of what was, you know, the type of numbers of people that they were going to be dealing with on January 6th, that they could have provided more manpower in terms of, and you said yourself that it was that security and crowd control, you know, it was just terrible in that. And it,
yeah.
and we're talking about the District of Columbia, and I'm thinking of fundamentally through all the agencies there, the vast amount of law enforcement resources that they had at their disposal, and this is what happened.
Well, yeah, I mean, and we saw how they immediately called in the National Guard, you know, afterward, and they mobilized yeah. that, and obviously, you know, we've seen where that was turned down because they didn't like the optics of it, is what they said. But I don't, you know, the optics wouldn't have really mattered. The thing is that typically amongst Trump supporters, right-wing supporters, conservative, you know, protesters, there's a vast amount of respect for law enforcement. So I don't think that
yeah.
there would have been any problem to have National Guard there. It would have been, you know, probably the appropriate show of authority around the Capitol rather than leaving it to a situation where you have a very underguarded capital in a lot of ways that kind of opened it up to then be agitated and provoked. I know a lot of people have spoken about Ray Epps and what his role may or may not have been there.
So there's
definitely some funny business going on. Yeah.
Let's talk about Ray Epps for a minute, because I know you have a lot more information than him, and he is this kind of foggy figure that runs in between both sides. For those like they used to say in the comic strip of the Phantom, for those who came in late, bring us up to speed on Ray, if you would, please.
Yeah, so Ray Epps is kind of this interesting character. He's an older gentleman. And he surfaced really when people found a video from January 5th, the night before, near BLM Plaza, where there had been some minor altercations between Antifa and others. And Ray Epps was, you know, encouraging the crowd and telling them, you know, we need to go into the Capitol. You know, that's where the problems are. We need to go into the Capitol. And so that kind of is what it is. A lot of people that were around, including, Baked Alaska, who's Paul Giannetti's another guy who's been charged out of all of this. He and others pointed at Ray Epps at that point and started screaming, Fed, Fed, Fed at him. So, there was another encounter, and I actually caught it on film when I was in Phoenix, where Ray Epps and Baked Alaska or Paul Giannetti, they were talking there. And some people have found that to be quite interesting. But in the end, Ray Epps was also at the very front line when the barricades were first breached on the outer perimeter of the Capitol, moving on to the Hill itself. I mean, he was right there kind of pushing it along, encouraging people. And he has never been charged. In fact, he's not even on the wanted list. He testified before the January 6th committee. And so we still don't know very much about him because it's all kept under seal. But he was obviously very involved in encouraging what we saw on January 6th. And so I think it's very interesting that he's not been charged while other people who did far less that day have been.
What have your experiences been with law enforcement post January 6th?
So January 6th occurred, obviously. It was what it was. I was there. I followed along with the crowd. I went into the building. I documented. I was on live stream for most of that live stream, although lots of people actually saw it while it was live. Failed to upload, so I've lost that footage forever, which is pretty upsetting. But I was able to, get out of it with some footage from inside the rotunda when police made the push, when there was kind of a haphazard decision-making process in retrospect as we look at body cam, and there was some confusion among the officers. Well, are these people sitting in, or are we going to violently push them out? Well, they chose option B, obviously, and things got pretty hairy in the rotunda, to the point where there was a woman who passed out in front of me, and you can see this on my video, and I don't know if she's okay, honestly. I've never confirmed who she is. Passed out on the floor, thought she was going to be trampled, and I didn't know what was going to happen. And in my own mind, I had kind of signed off, and I remember looking up at the eye of the rotunda and saying, well, that's pretty, if that's the last thing I ever see. But I didn't die that day, and I did get out, and I was very happy to go home and be with my boys. And so that's what I did. Roughly a week later, I was contacted by the FBI. They came to my house, knocked on the door, and they asked if I would come in and sit down for an interview with them. And I said, yeah, of course. I mean, everything that I had done was publicly posted anyways. So it's not like there was ever anything to hide. I'm a journalist. And so I went and I interviewed with them, gave them any footage that I had. I mean, obviously I had a little bit that I didn't think was particularly interesting as far as any sort of media value, but I turned that over to them as well. So it was very cooperative. I thought that meeting went well. The agents I dealt with were very respectful. They seemed to understand that I was a journalist. Obviously, I've got a body of work that goes back to at least 2019. Could be argued that it goes back to 2017. But, you know, so everything was okay as far as I thought. And then, you know, a few months go by, roughly 3 months, and I was still investigating things and trying to sort out what happened that day. There was one particular podcast that I did, and I spoke with another now charged. He was charged at the time as well, J.D. Rivera, another journalist that was there. I had him on, and then I had John Sullivan, a.k.a. Jaden X, who's somewhat notorious as being the one who CNN had paid out $70,000 for his video, including the video of Ashley Babbitt being shot by the officer there.
Right.
And so I had him on the show, and we talked about things, and I thought it was a pretty positive experience. I wasn't there to grill anybody. I was more interested to hear different perspectives. Obviously, JD leans a little bit further right than I do, and Jaden Hex is much further left than the both of us. And so I thought it would offer interesting insight and perspective from a wide range of ideas. And a week later, on April Fool's Day, no less, the Department of Justice decided that they were going to charge me with 4 federal misdemeanors, and I was contacted by the special agent who I'd spoken to some months earlier, and he asked if I would turn myself in. And so I met him at the FBI field office in Farmington, New Mexico. I turned myself in. They took me to a detention center in Grants, New Mexico. That's like a federal holding facility about 2 hours away. I was processed there. I waited to see a judge. You know, they did the whole thing where they put me in shackles and make me look like something. And I was before the judge initially. Conditions of my release included that I could not contact victims or witnesses of January 6th, which is pretty hard to understand how you even quantify that, but it didn't make sense. And so there was some argument early on about that I was a journalist and that I was going to continue to investigate January 6th. And then to make those conditions on me would essentially kneecap that process.
Right.
So the judge, you know, he was very receptive to that. And, you know, he said, yeah, you know, it looks like you're a journalist. And so all of that was removed. And so my restrictions right now under pretrial are pretty light. But, you know, as far as how that worked out for me, it's not a good thing. I had a plumbing business that had actually financed a lot of my second career for a lot of years. And as a result of, you know, the press and the media just kind of swarming around and immediately assuming that I'm some sort of violent insurrectionist and saying as much in the newsprint locally, I mean, I lost a lot of business to the point where that business is insolvent at this point and things don't look good. So, you know, that's how it goes, I guess. And everything happens for a reason. So I had to sell my house. You know, obviously paying legal fees is never a joy. I have a very good lawyer, at least, so I'm blessed in that aspect. And as of right now, I'm looking to July 27th, where I'll go to trial, and I hope to be exonerated.
Is there a fund where folks can help you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, people can find me on Cash App. You know, if they do, my tag is just my name, SHAWNWITZEMANN, or you can find me on Give, Send, Go, Witzman Family Fund. And I'm really encouraged with the money that I've been able to pull in through that. And everybody needs to understand that I've really given my life to this, and I'm okay with that. But, you know, as part of that, I mean, anything that I get, I mean, I pump right back into the work. I've been a businessman for many years, and I understand the importance of it all, and I can't leave anything on the floor. So, you know, I think that this entire thing is a battle for the soul of this nation, and I think it's a battle for the Constitution. If we're to the point where people are no longer able to speak freely or conduct, you know, their business as members of the press, then things are going to get much, much worse after this. And so, like I say, I'm very blessed. I've been given a lot of opportunities, and I think everything happens for a reason. I think I was given an opportunity to completely reset my life and devote myself to a cause that I need to be devoted to. I've often spoken about divine providence in the aftermath of all this. And so I can't say enough just how blessed I am, even though things may seem very rough right now.
One of the things I was talking in the first hour with my friend Gary Binford was you go to one of those things like Rock the Rip, and in some instances, folks like us kind of have like an inside straight because we have an interest in being informed as to what's going on. But by the same token, you know, that's all very layered. But you get a wealth of information. Some of it you're familiar with. Some of it you suspect and you have it affirmed. And you always come out empowered, and you come out encouraged. And
yeah,
things are pretty tough right now. And I know you've been at ground zero to see just exactly how tough they are, Sean. But
yeah.
in your investigation of what's going on and in your travels here over the last couple of months or since January 6th, what are the things that you find that you see that are encouraging in this country?
Well, I think, you know, it's funny how when things get really bad, and I spoke a little bit about that even on a personal level, that I think we're all given an opportunity to recognize what's truly important. So, I mean, as we lose things and we're watching this assault on our constitutional freedoms, I think America is being given an opportunity to understand just how important that document is and how that can be this one thing that kind of binds us all together. And I have watched over the course of the last year and a half as people have slowly come around to the idea that January 6th wasn't just a bunch of morons running around, you know, like chickens with their heads cut off, and that there was something deeper to it, and that we are on the verge of exposing a lot of truth. And so, I mean, people have used the term Great Awakening, but that's really what I think it is on a pretty extreme level. I know that, you know, one of the people I've always respected very much, even though I can't say I've always seen eye to eye with him on policy decisions or positions, is Roger Stone. And he's been coming out lately very strong in defense of J6ers. I think that due to his own persecution at the hands of the Department of Justice, he sees what's going on there. You know, obviously I spoke a little bit earlier about Joseph Flynn, having the opportunity to speak with him about it, and his family's also been persecuted. And I asked Roger Stone at the Reawaken Tour recently, I asked him, you know, what he was doing or if he was talking to Trump about any of this. And he said that Trump is very aware. He didn't get into details of the conversation, but I think it's picking up steam. I think people are becoming more aware. And I think we all realize what we stand to lose if we don't come together for the Constitution. And so I think that that's incredibly encouraging. I mean, there was a time when I trying to find people to talk to, you know, have me on to talk about this was, you know, actually pretty impossible. You know, a small time independent journalist like myself who, you know, claimed to do nothing wrong at the Capitol, a lot of people sneered their nose at it. And I think that that's changed. So again, that's very encouraging. And I think Americans have a real chance to save this country if they take some personal responsibility and if they step up to the plate and realize that we're about to lose everything if we don't.
And it's going to be guys like you, and it's going to be, you know, groups like Stop Hate. It's going to be individuals like that. And in this, I guess you can call it a network of conservative and right-minded people throughout the country, that we're fundamentally forging our own news media, because what's been left to us is just simply no longer trustworthy. And I think that's the magic of living in the time that we live in, Sean, because when Barack Obama won his second term, after thinking about this for about 3 or 4 years, I decided that it was time. I felt like I had something to say, and radio has always, that's been a love of mine, love affair with radio since I was a wee little nipper. And, you know, nowadays anybody can do this. You can get into this for $100. You get a nice USB microphone. You get some decent editing software. It's all free. And you can find platforms that will let you go out there and talk. And then you spread your word. And it's going to be through guys like you talking to guys like me and our listeners and what you guys did down at Rock the Red all over the country. And you know, it's kind of like popcorn. Yeah. It takes a little while for it to percolate, but once it begins to pop, stand back.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I mean, I think that's something fantastic that's going on in this country is the rise of independent alternative media, and that there are, you know, a vast amount of voices out there. I mean, it's funny where, you know, part of that is that I think it's harder sometimes to find funding to do it. And obviously with a lot of what I do, there's a lot of expenses involved. You don't get to travel around for free. It's a sad fact of life. But I think in the end that everything will be better served because of that. I mean, we watched as, you know, the media was taken over by major corporations on both the left and the right. And we've watched how the narrative has been controlled, manipulated, and we've been flat out lied to by institutions that we depended on to make us informed voters. And so I think there's a huge amount of the population who's realized that they can't trust those institutions anymore, and they have to go to the alternative voices. And the beauty about what we do is I think that there's a huge effort amongst independent media to make sure that everything we say can be documented, backed up, that we're not just spouting lies, because we are all sick of it. That's why we got into it. I mean, if there was one thing that motivated me to get into everything was I actually had a background in satire, and I had kind of marveled just at how easy it was to convince people. Yeah. I mean, it was disturbing to a certain point. And throughout the summer of 2020, I got to the point where I just didn't really want to do much satire anymore, because I was terrified by how people had just been completely manipulated into a point of ignorance that's just flat out dangerous. And so when you start to play with that, it's just no longer fun anymore. And I just said, you know, people need to see the truth in its rawest form possible. And so that was always what I was trying to do. Obviously with live streaming, there's no editing, there's no clipping. It exists as it is.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a huge part of it as well. I mean, and I think in the end that all of the video and everything that came out of January 6th, there's such a preponderance. And if everybody gives a chance for that evidence to come out and gives it time, that there's a very good chance that we're going to actually see the truth in ways that we never have before. And it's because of independent media. And it's because of guys like you who give platform to guys like me. You know, my dad, you know, the old hippie, he would have always said, you know, we're all feeding each other. So I think there's a little bit of that in all of it.
You've been really generous with your time tonight, Sean, and I don't want to keep you a whole lot longer. But before you leave, tell us a little bit about Stop Hate. We've talked about your experience, but let's talk about your involvement with this organization.
Yeah, StopHate.com was founded by Dave Summerall, actually, you know, after the riots in L.A. in 1992. So he's been at this a very long time. And the man has put so much effort into trying to bridge the gap and stop hate. I mean, it's really in the name, where I think through, you know, real information and engaging with other Americans, we have a chance. We have a chance to do that. And he's been dedicated to that. He reached out to me shortly after I was picked up and charged and asked how he could help me and has been really generous. And obviously through all of this, all I've ever said to anybody when they've offered charity is, well, I would prefer opportunities to work, ways to contribute. You know, I don't like just free money. You know, I like to work and earn my keep. And I think he's given me a great opportunity to do that. I know, you know, he's done just amazing work. The whole team there, I mean, Taylor Hansen, he's on the team, and we've got, you know, just great people, and the way we work together and produce different videos and things for people to watch, it's really something special. And I think his vision is really what carries that through. And so, you know, I just can't speak highly enough of the man. He's honorable in a way that I can say that I don't see a whole lot in media. And he keeps his word, and he works his hiney off to make sure that, you know, his people are taken care of as best as they can be, and to keep the wheels rolling. I mean, he speaks every day, and people can go follow us on Telegram to listen to these phone calls. He speaks to the guys that are in the jail, and he makes sure to get their stories out as much as he can, keep people informed. You know, we have the Department of Defense on StopHate.com, which goes through and lists every single fundraiser individual for each of the people who've been charged, so that people don't have to worry about donating to a site. And then you say, okay, well, how much of that money goes to the person? Well, there's none of that right there, because it's their individual Give, Send, Go account. So, I mean, people can go there and read all these different testimonies from these people whose lives have been irrevocably changed by the events of that day. And so I think that that's something that he's really done. And some of that may be, you know, to a disadvantage, is that, you know, he's not in it for the money. But the reality is that, you know, that's a huge part of anything that goes on. And so, like I say, there's ways for people to donate there as well, StopHate.com, and it's pretty self-explanatory. So, I mean, just an amazing organization, an amazing guy who's given me amazing opportunities to really, you know, work to get the truth out about, you know, January 6th and other subjects as well.
Sean, I appreciate tremendously the time that you've spent with us. You've been really generous with your time. And if you would, I have his contact information here somewhere, but you're right up on top of me. Tell David he has an invitation to come on the program and talk about what's going on as far as January 6th goes, and Stop Hate anytime. And you have a home here. Anytime you want to come back, we'll be happy to have you. And we will be looking forward to you coming back.
Absolutely. I really appreciate you having me on. And like I say, we just got to keep pushing at it. And anytime you need to hear from me, feel free. I'll be writing articles and doing everything I can at StopHate.com. So I really appreciate it. One other person I did want to mention, just as far as a shout out, give an opportunity, is a guy named Randy Ireland, who's also been working closely with me on a lot of things. And he has an organization, Americans for Justice, and you can find that at a4justice.org. And he's working really hard to get a lot of things together for the guys that are in the jail. So I just want to encourage everybody to reach out and check that out. He's going to have some very exciting things in the near future to get people involved.
Well, Sean, if you would pass my contact information to him, we'd love to have him on as well.
I will do.
Thank you so much once again. I'm not going to take up any more time. Sean Winsman, ladies and gentlemen, looking forward to talking to you again. And once again, Sean, I really appreciate the time you spent with us and the information that you've disseminated to us.
Absolutely. Thanks.
God bless you, man. That was terrific. I met he and David Summerall both at Rock the Red. Terrific guys. And, man, I'm glad he came on. That was good. That was terrific stuff. Where are we at? We're 20 till. What do we want to do? Well, we've got some time. The baby formula issue. Tucker Carlson wraps that up. We've got enough time to do that. So what we're going to do, if you're not a parent, you're probably not tuned in too much to it. But if you're a parent with toddlers, with infants, this is a pretty serious deal. There's this massive shortage of baby formula due to a huge distributor, baby formula manufacturer, Abbott, I think Abbott Laboratories or whoever they're, they make this stuff. There was a problem. They were shut down due to some kind of level of contamination 3 months ago. And they haven't been reopened. The government knew this was going on, man. And they didn't do anything about it. So now, all of a sudden, lo and behold, we've got shortages of baby formula for American, for the citizens, for the children of American citizens. We've got tons of show. However, for the children of illegal aliens crossing the border, we have pallets of the shit. We got more baby formula than you can shake a baby at. Tucker Carlson's talking about it, breaks it down beautifully. Let me find, where are you, Tuck? Can I not put that on there? Tucker, hoarding formula. Okay. Trump. We don't want Trump. We want Tucker. And I got like, those are like the two guys I have the most clips from. Donald Trump and Tucker Carlson. Tucker, all right, here we go. This is from, I think, last Friday, maybe.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. Happy Friday. At a press conference back on March 24th of this year, Joe Biden announced that thanks to the regime change war he's decided to voluntarily wage in Eastern Europe, our country, the United States, will soon face food shortages. Food shortages are, quote, going to be real, Biden said. Now, the reporters in the room dutifully transcribed the words and wrote their stories, but you may have missed it. You may not have even heard this because there weren't a lot of follow-up pieces about these man-made food shortages that Joe Biden was predicting. And that's weird if you think about it, because food shortages are inherently a big deal. You could argue they're even more significant than, say, a slap fight between actors at an awards ceremony. Food shortages are historic events. They overturn societies. They bring down empires. They often have. If you've got food shortages, you've got a potentially destabilizing problem on your hands. And now we do have food shortages. They're real, as Joe Biden predicted. As of tonight, at least 26 states are reporting that half their retail stores are completely out of baby formula. That would include the states of Texas, Tennessee, Missouri, and Iowa, and many others. So these are major population centers without enough food for newborns. In Memphis and Nashville, 52% of stores have no baby formula. Houston and Des Moines are reporting similar shortages. In San Antonio, a city with an unusually high percentage of families with small children, 57% of all stores in the city have no baby formula. Those are the numbers. Journalist Savannah Hernandez went to see for herself what the reality looks like. She went to 8 different stores in Texas, and not a single one of them had any baby formula to sell. Watch.
We talked to a couple moms outside who said that they've been having a really hard time finding formula, and so this is what we're seeing right now.
The second Target that we've been to, we first went to a Target in Louisville, and now we're in Frisco, and as you guys can see, it's pretty much the exact same thing here. Grocery stores pretty much empty, no formula to be found. I've talked to a couple moms who were telling me that people have spent upwards of $150 on formula on Amazon. Some moms can't even find the formula that their baby requires. One mother telling me her child is constipated, needed a specific type of formula, couldn't find it, so that's what's going on.
So that's real. You may not like Savannah Hernandez's politics, but she's got a video camera inside Target, and they don't have any baby formula. So babies need to eat, but they can't. Is that a big problem? Well, yes, it's a big problem. How big? We have a lot of problems right now. Ask yourself, is this a bigger problem than, say, using the wrong pronoun or Trump voters peacefully trespassing in a public building? It seems like a bigger problem than that. So you would think the Biden administration would do something about it, and they certainly could if they wanted to. They can do anything. These are the people who claim to have the power to control global weather systems, the power to bend human biology to their will. So nothing is beyond the scope of their powers. And yet in this particular case, Joe Biden is in no hurry to fix the problem. In fact, he joked about it today. Watch.
If we'd been better mind readers, I guess we could have. But we moved as quickly as the problem became apparent to us.
Oh, if we'd been better mind readers. Get it? It's hilarious because actually nobody can read minds. Joe Biden's being sarcastic like your 14-year-old daughter. Lay off, Dad. It's not my fault. Okay, so Joe Biden does not read minds. But the question is, does anyone in the White House read newspapers or watch television news? Supplies of baby formula were down at least 20% as far back as January. That was not hidden knowledge. It was public knowledge. It was out there if you were looking. Here's one representative headline from the Fox affiliate in West Virginia, WVNS, back in February. Quote, what the baby formula shortage means for parents. There you have it. Americans were worried about not having enough baby formula. There was a shortage in February. But the White House wasn't concerned. And they knew. We know that for certain because Brian Deese, who's the director of the White House Economic Council, just admitted that he knew on CNN. Quote, We were aware back in February, and we've had a team on this from the FDA and interagency process since then. Okay, so Joe Biden has been on this problem since February. So why is it still a problem? Why is it still impossible to buy baby formula in stores in San Antonio tonight? Well, the White House has an answer for that, too. And the answer is greedy mothers. They're the problem. Like kulaks hiding grain, counter-revolutionary moms in this country are undermining America's baby formula supply. They're, quote, hoarding baby formula. Watch Joe Biden's flack explain.
But if you are a parent who's looking for formula right now, struggling to find what you need, do you have even a rough guess of how long these shortages are going to last? What should parents be bracing for here?
Well, we've already seen an increase in supply over the past couple of weeks. What we are seeing, which is an enormous problem, is hoarding. People hoarding because they're fearful, that is one element of it, and people hoarding because they are trying to profit off of fearful parents.
Oh, now we're down to Zimbabwean economics. We don't have enough to eat because greedy people are hoarding it. It's your fault, America's moms, you and your piggish little babies, always thoughtlessly eating, 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 eating. Show some patriotic restraint and stop buying so much food for your kids, you greedy wreckers. That's the White House position on the baby formula shortage. In fact, and it's possible this will not surprise you, the reality is just the opposite of what you heard. America's moms are not hoarding baby formula because they're greedy or their fat little babies are eating too much. Sorry, Jen Psaki. The Biden administration is hoarding baby formula. The administration's WIC program, formerly known as Special Supplemental Nutrition Program for Women, Infants, and Children, is by far the largest purchaser of baby formula in the United States. That is true no matter what they're telling you from the podium at the White House. Here's how it works. States award a contract to a baby formula manufacturer to provide the product to WIC participants. Then people who receive WIC benefits take a voucher to the store and buy the baby formula from that manufacturer. Now, government agencies get a kickback from the manufacturer in the form of a rebate, sometimes as high as 85% of the wholesale price. In other words, the baby formula manufacturer essentially pays the government to maintain this monopoly. And it's good business for everybody. It's been going on for a long time. The problem right now is that the Abbott Nutrition Company has made the baby formula for the vast majority of WIC contracts. The government had all its eggs virtually in Abbott's basket. Unfortunately, Abbott just closed its plant in Sturgis, Michigan because of contamination. And that means that millions of people who used WIC to buy Abbott products are forced to buy competing formulas, and they're doing it all at once. So a government monopoly overseen by Joe Biden caused this baby formula crisis. So what's the government doing to fix it? Well, here's what they're not doing. They're not invoking the Defense Production Act to manufacture more baby formula. Of course not. That's for Ukrainians only. Shut up, American moms. Instead, the Biden administration is doing the opposite, which is to say doing the unimaginable. They're shipping scarce baby formula to the southern border to benefit illegal aliens who have no right to be here in the first place. Now, we know this because of a Florida congresswoman called Kat Kamak. Here's the video.
This got sent to me by a Border Patrol agent this morning and said, this is disgusting. You will not believe this. They're receiving pallets and more pallets of baby formula at the border. This was taken at Ursula processing facility where thousands are being housed and processed and then released subsequently into the United States. So think about this. This is what America last looks like.
That's real, by the way. The administration does not deny that it's real. Congresswoman Kamak also uploaded these two pictures onto Twitter. The one on the left is from the Ursula Processing Center at the border, shelves and pallets packed with baby formula, the congresswoman wrote. The second is from an empty shelf here in the United States reserved for American citizens. So there's never been a clearer statement of the administration's priorities. Hey, American mothers, your kids are too expensive. Go have an abortion and get back to work at an Amazon warehouse. Congresswoman Katie Porter of California said that out loud this week. You're poor? Have an abortion. Get back to work. Other Democrats said the same. Try breastfeeding! ! Wrote 76-year-old Bette Midler today on Twitter. It's free and available on demand. It's been a while since she's done that, but that's her position. So here you have an elderly, out-of-touch, rich liberal lady lecturing struggling American moms to shut up and suffer in silence. And by the way, make your baby shut up too. Now, if you can think of a more perfect distillation of modern politics of the left circa 2022 than that, send us an email and let us know what it is, because we've never seen anything that perfect. And yet, here's the interesting part. That's not at all the message that the Bette Midlers of the world are sending to the millions of illegal aliens who are flooding into our country. The message to them is just the opposite. Come. We welcome you. We will subsidize your childbearing, whatever it takes. Even if we have to take baby formula for American citizens, we will help you. That's literally what they're saying. And more to the point, that's what they're doing. So how do you get the Biden administration to pay attention to American citizens, to you? Let's say you need baby formula. You can't get it. Joe Biden doesn't care. Bette Midler's mocking you. Go breastfeed. It's free. How do you get them to awaken to the fact that you exist, that American children are suffering? Well, it turns out there is a way to do that. The baby formula shortage, and we looked this up, like every crisis in this country, may affect you, but it affects trans people disproportionately, because trans people are always, and Joe Biden often says this, are the ones who suffer most. And as Congresswoman Cori Bush once told us, nothing is more important than protecting birthing people.
I sit before you today as a single mom, as a nurse, as an activist, and as a congresswoman, and I am committed to doing the absolute most to protect black mothers, to protect black babies, to protect black birthing people.
Ooh, well, it's the last one that's going to get Joe Biden's attention. So your kids don't have enough to eat. They can't be bothered to help you at all, though they caused this problem. But once Joe Biden finds out that the trans community is suffering, once he sees the faces of that suffering, he will do all he can to help. He'll airlift those pallets of formula from the border and distribute them to the many American trans mothers who need them. Once he sees these faces, and here they are, ladies and gentlemen, straight from your Calvin Klein ad, pregnant men. The pregnant man emoji, Joe Biden. Do it for the pregnant man emoji. Subscribe to the Fox News YouTube channel to catch our nightly opens, stories that are changing the world and changing your life. From Tucker Carlson Tonight.
They're going to try to make the midterm election, the Democrats, it is, are going to try to make the midterm election about abortion. The Alito opinion that was leaked to the press and everybody does not, let me say this again, does not do away or criminalize abortion. What it does is it renders the issue of abortion back to the several states. States' rights, enumerated powers. You see, in the Constitution, the government has enumerated powers. They are limited. They are finite. And liberals and Democrats hate that, but that's the truth. And those issues, not mandated for federal oversight or to have federal oversight, again, are returned back to the several states, to the individual states. So how does it work there? Well, it's going to be up to the people of that state as to whether or not they want to maintain abortion. Some states may want to do away with it completely. There are restrictions. There are already restrictions in a number of states, a 15-week, if you don't get it done within 15 weeks, you can't get an abortion here in Texas. I think it's Texas is one of them. And so that's what the left is going to use. And, if you think that the Biden people are worried about the starvation of the children of American citizens, these people want abortion fundamentally from one end of the spectrum to the other, from conception up to till and after birth. After 15 weeks, the children, and that's what they are, they're children. They're not zygotes. They're not fetuses. They're children. They got fingers. They got toes. They got eyes. They can feel. They are, in that limited way, sentient. They are aware. And we know that they're aware because they try to move away from the surgical instruments that are there to dismember them, to pull them apart, because that's how you do that. But we don't want to talk about that part because it's distasteful, unseemly, disturbing, as it well should be. And that's how we need to look at it, because that's what's happening. Pro-choice? Okay. Pro-dismemberment. Pro-disemboweling. It's the same thing. And all these Hollywood fools and all these people in the press that can't have their religion without this sickest of their sacraments of death are running around like chickens with their heads cut off thinking, I got to wrap this up, thinking that what this means is the end of abortion, the abolishing of abortion, and it doesn't. But they also realize that if this matter returns to the states, Roe v. Wade is going to be overturned. It's going to be overturned soon. This isn't going to change anything, and it will run back to the states to decide what's going on. No uterus, no opinion. Okay, little cat eye glass wearing, easily offended, double, triple, forte, fourple, latte, swilling posers out there that say no uterus, no opinion. Just as a point of reference, it was 9 remarkably uterusless and vaginaless individuals whose opinion allowed abortion to become what it is today. No Ruth Bader Ginsburg, no Sandra Day O'Connor. Thank you, Penelope. 90 seconds up. No Sandra Day O'Connor. No Elena Kagan. No Ruth Bader Ginsburg. No Tangerine Dream McQueen or whoever that chick is, or the guy for that left-wing lunatic. That's all the time we got, guys. ACP heard here Tuesdays, Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Recorded incarnation of the program goes out on the Mojo 5-0 Radio. Thank you. Mojo 5-0 Radio Network. Mojo50.com. That's where you go. If you're not listening, you should be. The very best in libertarian conservative talk radio. That's all the time we got, guys. Special thanks to Sean Witzman. Special thanks to my brother from another mother, my good friend Gary Benford, for being guests on the show tonight. That's all the time we got. We'll be back probably on Thursday, taking a look at things as we do through a conservative perspective. In the meantime, God bless you. God bless America. We'll see you then.